Can you explain why Bitcoin is such an attractive financial tool?
Because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously.
So the one thing we can count on is discovery. Bitcoin goes forward in the year 2024.
You know, words of the doors.
12, 11, 10.
The time to hesitate
9,
is through.
Ignition sequence start.
We choose to go to the moon 5, in this decade 4, and do the other 3, thing. Not 2, because they are 1, easy, but because 0, they are hard.
All engine running.
Lisa, how are you going?
Hey, DJ. I'm so well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm always good when I get to talk to other Bitcoiners around the world. And as I was just saying to you off air, there is a little bit of therapy in this sort of conversation where I get to have these conversations. And generally at the end of it, in fact, if not always, I can't remember a single incident where it hasn't concluded this way. I feel like I'm less crazy than I was going into the conversation, which is nice.
I'm glad to help. See if I can help.
Yeah, well, let's see. The pressure's on. How did you discover Bitcoin?
Oh, gosh. I was trying to identify trends in the technology space because I felt like I needed to make some, what I didn't know at the time were just going to be absolutely drastic changes to my investment strategy. And so I give most of the credit to a magazine that I stumbled upon, the MIT Tech Review. I've talked about this several times, but they used to publish a list of the top, I think it was 50 technologies of the year. And I compiled a whole bunch of those lists and started looking at the technologies, thinking that, you know, I was going to be a genius and find some thread or some common ground. And what kept coming up is the word blockchain. And I think I rightly assessed that, you know, blockchain was the future. What I didn't realize at the time, of course, is that there's only one that matters. So I've, you know, started doing an assessment of a whole bunch of blockchains. And then, of course, because we all fancy ourselves as day traders, you know, I started buying and selling, I don't know how many coins, 8 or 10 or 20, whatever it was. Until I really found that I, you know, didn't want to be a day trader. I didn't want to sit and have to try to figure out these coins and, you know, if they were really going to work and if there was actually a use case behind marketing. And, you know, I wanted to simplify my life, which is why I got out of a huge managed fund that I was in. I had a wealth manager who was looking after things for me. And he had me in 26 different mutual funds. And I just felt like there has to be a way for me, because I wasn't interested in most of what he had me in, or after I did a thorough deep dive into what he had me invested in, I really discovered that at the end of the day, I was invested in funds where their biggest holdings were, you know, say the top 5 companies, Apple, Microsoft, mm-hmm. and the like. And I don't know. I just started talking about Bitcoin all the time and then started a consulting practice where I was actually on a date with someone one night and I guess I was talking about Bitcoin too much because the guy said, I think you should start a consulting practice and you should teach people about Bitcoin. He said, that way you can talk about Bitcoin during the day and we can talk about anything else at night. And although he was kidding, that's exactly what I did. I built a slide deck and started telling people that I was an expert in Bitcoin. And this guy was nice enough to introduce me to you know, some of his friends, and he was an oil and gas, he does own an oil and gas production company. And so he's well connected, and actually had two public energy companies that were clients and a whole bunch of wealth managers here in Houston. I went and sat down with them. I went and sat down with portfolio companies. I went and sat down with oil and gas companies and just explained Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. So that, anyway, I don't know about fake it till you make it, but I fell in love with Bitcoin, and I felt like everyone around me needed to know. And I still feel that way. I feel like everyone at least needs to know what Bitcoin is. And if you decide after talking with me for an hour or 2 hours that you hate it, then we don't ever have to talk about it again. But honestly, that's only happened to me one time in 5 years. I've had one person say to me, oh, okay, I really appreciate you telling me, like, this is not for me.
Right. Yeah, the strike rate, that's a pretty high strike rate. I'm curious, with these mutual funds, you know, what did you say? You're in like 23 of them. I mean, surely there'd be some overlap there, right? And I guess it's similar to like a managed fund, I think is what we tend to refer to them as in Australia. But with your superannuation, say, which is, I guess, it's your retirement fund, right? It's like an IRA. Is that what you guys call them over there?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So, you know, you don't get to decide where your capital is allocated. You're paid a portion of your salary, and it gets siphoned off into some nominated mutual fund or managed fund or, you know, a superannuation fund. And if you ever call them up and ask them, you know, hey, where is this capital allocated? Generally, they won't even tell you where it's allocated, let alone you asking them to allocate it into specific areas. I had Andy on from the Bitcoin Advisor a few weeks ago, and we were discussing this. It's kind of funny to me, like, that you'd have, like, that would be a viable strategy. 23 mutual funds. I mean, you kind of run out.
26,
yeah. Right. Once you go past the FANG stocks, like, there's not a lot else you can do. And I think I read somewhere that adjusting for inflation, the S&P 500, although it looks like it's up, it's like some 5,000%, when you adjust for inflation, it's actually had gains of 500% over the last 20 years or something. It's pretty measly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, I don't know. People feel like they've done very well, and I'm sure that investment advisors are valuable to someone. I would never use one again. I will never use one again. You know, I think Bitcoin gives you the ability to have your life back.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin gives you the ability to focus on things that you want to think about, things that you enjoy doing with your hands or your body or your time, right? It, like, if you're a gardener, you can go put your whole soul into gardening. If you are really interested in art history, you can study art history. If you're really into it, whatever it is, right? Claiming your time back and preserving your energy, your own time, your own energy through Bitcoin, and not having to sit in front of CNBC and not having to constantly follow the news, right? What geopolitical thing will happen that will affect my retirement, right? Like, why do we have to basically go stand in front of a Mack truck, which is the economy, in order to guarantee that we're able to pay for goods and services, you know, in our during our retirement years? And that's where I think we're doing. I think we go and we put our funds into the S&P, or we make these investments, and we're essentially just standing out, you know, naked in the cold, hoping that we don't get hit by a truck, because, you know, war could break out. I don't know, China could default on their real estate market could collapse, which will send shocks around the world, right? There are all these things that can happen that have, that I have no control over, yet all of those things have control over my future.
Yeah.
And once you see what Bitcoin is, and you know, you realize that it keeps you warm and safe and protected from anything else in the world that might be happening, why would you choose to be a part of a system that can potentially bring you harm? I mean, you really don't have to be a genius to own Bitcoin. In fact, I think that it's the only way for, I do think, by the way, people that do own Bitcoin are geniuses. I do think that if you're curious, it's just been a huge blessing for you. You know, if you're not the one person who told me, you know, thanks for telling me about Bitcoin, I'm not interested, literally believes that he has the answer to every question. Like I won't tell you actually what his work is, because he does this really unique, he does a couple of things that are very, very unique, but super disparate, you know, hobbies, occupations. He's got like three different gigs going, and just believes that, like, he's, you know, he knows how it's all going to play out, which I think, you know, we in the Bitcoin space probably would say, yeah, we know how it's going to play out too. It's not great. But in fact, like, we don't know how it's going to play out, right? Like, that's why we invest in Bitcoin. That's why we put our time and our energy and our savings in Bitcoin. Anyway, sorry, a little bit of a ramble there, but
no, it's perfect. Those sorts of personality types, where they're just overconfident. It's actually interesting to me that there's like this person is involved in sort of three different occupations, hobbies, whatever it is, and there's some overlap with them. You'd think that being able to manage those three silos or those three areas of interest or whatever, that would actually by default make you a relatively curious person, because you're sort of playing around in these different spaces, these disparate spaces that require some sort of interdisciplinary, you know, managed workload, whatever it is. And yet this is exactly what Bitcoin is. It's this giant interdisciplinary thing that you can apply pretty much anything that you are interested in. You can pour it into Bitcoin, so to speak, in a sort of a metaphorical, metaphysical sense. And as you said earlier, it allows you then to spit back and reclaim your time and energy so that you can pursue those things. And I totally agree with you with respect to, if you're curious, it's a blessing, because I dare say certainly everyone that I've spoken to on this podcast is incredibly curious and wants to know. And often also, if they sort of had that curiosity embedded within them, but perhaps they needed that little bit of humble pie, so to speak, to knock them down a peg or so. Because when you're just so overconfident with how it's going to play out, I mean, even you know, we have our ideas, as you said, as Bitcoiners, we have a general idea of how it's going to play out, and most of that's just from reading a history book. And when you print trillions of dollars within a short space of time, it doesn't end well. But to suggest that you have any idea what's going on specifically, like, you don't. I mean, most Bitcoiners will freely admit that they don't know, but they just know that this thing ticks over every 10 minutes, and that's reliable. And they can anchor to it somehow. It's like a North Star or something.
It is a North Star. It is a North Star, but you have to figure out Bitcoin in order to figure out that it's your North Star. It's interesting. I was having a conversation. I'm in a book club. I'm in a women in Bitcoin book club. And it was started by Natalie Brunell, and it's a bunch of names that you'd probably know.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, we really got down this rabbit hole of the feminine side of Bitcoin. And what we realized is, as Bitcoiners, we're all a little bit rebellious. And what do I mean by that? One of the ladies in our group has recently had a baby, and I think the baby's, I don't know, a year and a half old, but after 9 months or a year, she went back to work full time, and they had made the decision to put the baby on baby formula. She said she had no idea how much seed oil and corn syrup was in baby formula.
Yeah.
And she and her husband went on this search basically for baby formula without any of this garbage. You'd think that at a base of society in the United States, that we would figure out how to put good things in baby formula, right? If there's anybody on earth we're going to feed well, like really, like, let's not lie to one another about why we put corn syrup in everything. Like, just stop for 1 minute, you know, let's put good stuff in baby formula. But no. And so they went on a search and wound up sourcing a baby formula in the UK. Another one of the women has grown children, and she was telling us that, you know, when her kids were born, she went down the whole vaccine rabbit hole and decided not to get them vaccinated for many things. And when she did have them vaccinated, instead of having them vaccinated in bundles, she always had them vaccinated, you know, with one vaccine at a time, so that she could very carefully track reactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm super far down, or going down the how food affects your hormones rabbit hole.
Mm.
And anyway, all this to say, what we discovered as, you know, kind of women, moms in Bitcoin, is that it's not about Bitcoin, right? It's not about this thing that you can buy on an exchange, or you can hold in an IRA, or that you can, it's not about any of that. It's not about the number. Bitcoin is this thing that's brought together people who are willing to question socialized ideas, right? And a socialized idea is something that we widely accept as okay, right? For example, baby formula. Like, mm-hmm. I've never known that baby formula had garbage in it until she told us that last night. It would have never even occurred to me, but clearly I didn't have an opinion one way or the other until last night. And I learned that, you know, it's riddled with, in fact, it's largely synthesized forms of energy, synthesized chemical forms of energy.
Oh, it's complete trash.
Complete trash.
Like, it's probably hyperbole to say that it's poison, but like, that whole rabbit hole is fairly familiar to me.
How do you know about it? How did you know this?
Well, like, life circumstances over recent years effectively has exposed me to, they sort of coalesced together, actually, interestingly enough, between the discovery of Bitcoin and the, I think I mentioned this actually with Julian Figueroa, so, you know, I'm not revealing too much here, but like, you're having kids, basically, you're always more cognizant and aware and curious of the things around you, but then Bitcoin gets plugged into that character trait or that personality type and then amplifies it, you know, all the way up to 11, and you become hyper aware to the point where it could be detrimental, like, and you just walk around with a tinfoil hat on all the time, which isn't wholly unjustified. But when you read the labels and the ingredients of some of this stuff, you're just like, holy dooly, like, that is just complete synthetic bullshit in this food that you're supposed to be giving this small child to nourish them and to make them healthful. And obviously there's extenuating circumstances. Some mothers are unable to breastfeed and all that sort of stuff. And I don't have an opinion either way. It's not none of my business. But if you have the optionality and the choice, yeah, you got to steer clear of that kind of stuff. And we've gone so far as, what's interesting is that it requires more time and energy to not do those things, i.e. feed them formula and so on and so forth, than it is to seek out nutritional alternatives, even just beyond general breastfeeding, right? You make meals, you source high quality, nutrient dense ingredients, you prepare it from scratch. And it's difficult. Like, for instance, tortillas, like we've started making our own tortillas in the last 12 months because, you know, you have tacos and it's just easy. Making tortillas is super easy, but it takes time. It takes energy, and it certainly takes a lot more time and energy than going to the shops and buying a packet of it and just having it ready to go in the cupboard. But the trade-off is that packet tortilla is full of shit, like seed oils and soy and other sort of booster, you know, amalgamations. Like, it should have flour and water and a little bit of salt. That's it. But it's got all this other stuff as preservatives. Now, if you don't have something like Bitcoin and you're constantly on this hamster wheel and you're having to have more, like, you don't have as much time and energy as you ordinarily would if you had a little cache of savings. Well, then, yeah, you're effectively coerced. It's what SAFE says, Saferdin Amous, with fiat food and fiat science and all these other things. It all basically boils down to time and energy and an ability to choose where you direct that time and energy in the most effective way. And if your money is losing purchasing power at a rate of knots, and you're not cognizant of any of that stuff, you're just going to just be a passenger, and you'll lose time and energy in other ways. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Well, it's so interesting that it's that you've now mentioned Saferdin, because the book that we are reading right now in our book club is the Fiat Standard. Mm-hmm. And the chapter that we were on last night was the chapter that deals with, you know, kind of the fiat lifestyle, which is, this is how we got on the whole food topic and formula. And, you know, again, right, like, this is, to me, the coolest part about Bitcoin is that I feel like I finally found my people. Mm-hmm. You know, when my daughter was in lower school and middle school, I think, like, her school did not like me. Why didn't they like me? Well, for a few reasons. I always took her back to school 2 weeks late. My husband and I decided to take her back to school late every year because we spent a large part of our summer with his family, where, you know, she could be outside and do all these outdoor activities all day, every day. And, you know, I live in Houston. We live in Houston.
Right.
And so, you know, for her to come back to school, you know, August the 12th or something, when it's seriously 8 million degrees in Houston, so that she can, you know, be in school 6 hours a day. And by the way, 2.5 hours of that 6.5 hours is her standing in line. Right. Like, okay, let's stand in line. Let's get ready to go to the gym. Okay. Let's stand in line. Let's get ready to go to lunch. Let's stand in line. We're going to go out I was like, forget it. We're not doing that. So I'd take her back to school 2 weeks late or 3 weeks late. And her school also never wanted to allow the kids to bring their own lunch, which I just wholly rejected. I'm like, look, you serve garbage. She never feels well when I pick her up. It's because you're serving food that is full of something that's upsetting to her. And, you know, I mean, it's way too much to share, but it took her to a neurologist and had her on a prescription medicine. And finally, I was like, forget it. You know what? I'm going to demand that the school let me send her lunch. which they finally agreed to do. But their big thing was, well, you have to pay us anyway for the lunch plan. And it was, I think it was about $800 at the time annually, and you paid it with your tuition. And I said, fine, well, we will pay you your $800 so that we don't upset your apple cart. But she's bringing her own lunch.
Damn.
But then here she is in the lunchroom, you know, as a 7-year-old, 8-year-old with a lunch kit, and no one else has a lunch kit.
Nope.
Until guess what? A lot of people started bringing their lunch.
Oh.
And it, you know, but like you, and I feel like if Bitcoin would have been around back then, like this would have been a subject that Bitcoiners locally, like this is a subject we can unite on, because we all see the damaging effects that food have, and we all have a different idea of what's best for you know, best for us, best for our kids. And actually, not to really get off on a tangent, but I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I wish I could remember whose it was, but the person was saying we shouldn't call public schools anymore. We should call them state schools, because they don't teach kids how to think. They teach kids what to think.
Oh yeah.
Like they're indoctrinating. They're not educating.
Totally. That's the great lie. I mean, Daniel from Once Bitten podcast, he's obviously a huge advocate of homeschooling, and you know, the book Choose Life that he's written, and a few others that other books that he's recommended, have been fairly instrumental in my own thinking about all that sort of stuff. And even just explaining that the whole school system is basically based off the Prussian school system, where it was effectively established so that you could just move students from one formalized setting in the day straight into the military, effectively. You're just churning out people to become cannon fodder. That was the whole point of the Prussian school system, which has then been adopted and I guess softened over time to have some sort of, you know, educational sheen on it. But yeah, state schools are a trash. There's countless stories, particularly over the last few years, where the quality of schooling and education in these institutions have just deteriorated at a pace. And you hear stories, anecdotes from friends that I've got that work in that system. And I have one friend actually that finished his uni degree, went to go and do a placement at a school, was there for a week, had such a terrible experience just, you know, just trying to round out his degree, that he was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this at all. So he just wasted like 3 years effectively of his life, or 4 years, whatever it was, for the degree. He literally was that adamant. What he'd seen, he was just like, I can't do that. That's not happening. Because he described these situations in the school where the teachers had just given up. They just didn't care. They're just like, well, we don't have any power to, you know, kids would come in to math class, for instance, and they'd be like, I don't feel like doing this. I feel depressed or whatever it is. And okay, we'll go into the chill out room and sit on a beanbag and have a cup of tea and, you know, hope you feel better. That's the extent of it, and that's their education. Imagine paying $800 not only to feed your child garbage food, but then the rest of the school fees to get a shitty education. And the fact that the school even had the hide to come and tell you that you couldn't bring your own packed lunch for your daughter, like, who the fuck are you? I'll stop you there.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, it was such a process to get this approved. There was an all school, I don't know, I can't remember what they call it, it was so long ago, but it was an evening event, right, where they had the faculty and whomever up on stage. And this is where I first brought up the, hey, I'd like to have Ella bring her lunch. You know, oh no, you can't, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. I'd done a whole bunch of research on what they spent to actually feed the kids. And it was like $1 something a day. And I compared that with what other private schools were spending on their students for lunch and found out that like some of the other schools had chefs and blah, blah, blah. And who knows what was better or worse. All I wanted was for her to have the ability to take her own lunch. I wasn't asking for a chef. I wasn't asking for them to spend more money. It was just, you know, I really would like for her to bring her own lunch. And Ella went to this Catholic school, a Catholic girls' school in Houston. And I had to go sit with Sister Dunn, who was the head of school, who was like 112 years old, and plead my case to her on why I wanted my child to bring her lunch. Like, this is after I'd already sat with the head of the lower school and, you know, talked to her teacher, and she's been to the neurologist and she's on a prescription medicine and blah, 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 blah. All to just be able to pack lunch for a child.
And we should just
like,
mention
how, like, how, I mean, sorry to just ramble for one more second, but how is that beneficial to the child, right? All of these grown-ups wasting all of this energy. Where, how does that benefit anyone? They should have just said, sure. Yeah. You know, it's, we've built it into our budget that, you know, it's, you know, I'm so sorry. You know, we really need for you to continue paying for the food. We know that doesn't really sound fair, but we've built it into our budget such that this is how it works. But, right, you know, absolutely respect your right. If you want to send her with her, whatever it is for lunch. Yes.
Right. A reasonable, rational, understanding response, like an adult response to this situation where, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, and at one point or two points, they suggested she should go to school somewhere else. And it's like, I'm sorry, you're inviting my child to leave the school because, you know, I would like for her to have the ability to bring her lunch.
I think that's like, cutting really? Your nose off to spite your face. I'm pretty sure that's the definition of that.
She's, you know, she was a great kid and, you know, did really well academically. And
well, I was going to mention
very
this
well
is,
liked. And like,
this is,
why do you?
This is your daughter Ella, who is now at Cornell and is endeavoring to have a Bitcoin scholar program.
Yes.
You know, like this, yeah. I mean, she's excelling right now as we speak. And it sounds funny to talk about this because, you know, I'm just a stranger dude with a podcast on the internet. But, you know, I follow Ella on Twitter, and it's just remarkable to hear this backstory and then contrast it with what I know of Ella just through what she shares on Twitter with respect to, you know, the Cornell University program and the Bitcoin Club and a few other bits and bobs that she's in interested in. To go through this nonsense with some state school about, you know, wanting to bring your own lunch, it's just like, yeah, this is why we Bitcoin,
well,
right?
It's, yeah. It there's so much more to that story, which I won't, you know, I would love to air my grievances with that school. not to pick on that school, but again, to further drive home the point that, you know, we need to be questioning, you know, you use the word tinfoil hat, like we do need to be questioning how it is that we got ourselves to the place that we're at, right? Everyone is fat. And I was listening to Dr. Peter Attia the other day. I was walking and listening to his podcast, and he referred to the fat as the overnourished. It's like, okay, the overnourished.
That's being kind though, because there's no nourishment in the crap that they're eating.
Right. No, it's being generous to say overnourished.
Totally.
And you know, you mentioned depression. You said the, you know, the kids were depressed or whatever at that school. Like, how do we get depressed? Well, you know, I don't know, another rabbit hole, but one of the things, again, we talked about on our, at our book club last night is this, you know, how have we been metabolically disrupted by the chemicals in our food, right? How did we get to where we are? How do we, and how do we fix it, right? Go back to the infant formula. Like, how do we just say, okay, wait, guys, like, time out. What are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be the smartest people, you know, that are smartest. We have access to more education, right? People from other countries flood here to attend our Ivy League schools, and they flood here to work in our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have failed just at a very basic human level, which is, you know, having a real conversation about where did all this go wrong and how do we get the train back on the track, right? We should all be healthy. We should all be able to protect our energy. If I go to work every day and do my job and I get paid every 2 weeks or once a month or whatever, every day, whatever it is, however someone's job is structured, they should be able to protect that energy investment in a way that allows them to have security, you know, in the future.
Absolutely. That's
that should just be our goal as a society. Let's get everybody to a place where they have security when they're 80, so that they're not homeless with Alzheimer's at 80, right? Like, how do we prepare that if we're 80 and we have Alzheimer's, how do we protect ourselves? And you simply cannot within this system unless you Bitcoin, right? Unless you opt out of the socialized norm of investing, which is 26 different mutual funds and this whole lie that you have to be diversified and this whole lie that, by the way, if you are invested in American companies and, you know, some sort of emerging country companies, that's somehow diversification.
Yeah.
It's not.
I know people that have diversification in their medical like regime, where they have a certain number of pills that they have to take every single day, and it could be up to 25 per week. You know, that's the kind of, like, instead of looking at the root cause and just asking the five whys, root cause analysis, if five whys get to the root cause, they just superficially fix it with a pill, which then fix one thing and then, you know, affects another thing. So you have to take a different pill for that thing to modulate the other thing. And it just is like this web of ignorance, I think, that we weave. And I think at the core of all of this is that Bitcoin allows for that curiosity in early adopters and the sort of the individuals that I guess are involved with Bitcoin deeply at this point in time. It allows them to indulge in their curiosity and amplify their curiosity. But for anyone else that's beginning to discover it, it encourages you to develop and cultivate your own cognition, so that you can think more clearly about the things. You can think about thinking. You can. It goes beyond just feeling the experiences that you're having. You can then think about them, and then once you can think about them, you can act upon them with more intention and more mindfulness. And so you can approach a bottle of baby formula, and you can you're cognizant of okay, well, what's in this? You can at least ask that question. And then if you come to the conclusion that, like, okay, I don't mind any of those things, proceed, no problem. But the ability to just ask that question, to be able to be cognizant enough to go, what is in this and what kind of an effect is it going to have, is very underrated in society these days.
You've hit on it. You've hit on it. And this is a topic that Ella and I discuss, you know, frequently, is that being able to set aside time every day to think,
mm-hmm.
like that should be at the top of our list. I think that's my opinion. We should have time every single day to just sit or walk or wherever you do your best thinking and think, but we don't. We live in this programmed world. We take socially accepted practices as truth. And I don't know. I think this, again, this is what I love about Bitcoin. This is what I love about Bitcoiners. I feel like we all have come to Bitcoin from an angle, and whether it's the baby formula issue or it's the sound money part of it, or it's the human rights aspect of private property for every human on earth. We all got here by questioning a socialized norm.
Mm-hmm. And then it allows you to keep questioning and to keep amplifying. And because you have that quote-unquote safety net, so to speak, you hold your own keys and you secure them properly and all of that sort of stuff, you literally can just go about your day. And then you can actually have the courage. I mean, there is that notion of Bitcoin being F you money, fuck you money, where you now have optionality to say, nah, I'm not going to do that. And there's no dire economic consequence to that. You're not constantly economically beholden to another person, to another entity, to another thing, whether it's the state, a company that you're employed at, or indeed a school that you're sending your kids to. You're not economically beholden, and so you can actually step back, think about the situation, have optionality, and then act in whatever is the best in interest to you, your family, whatever it happens to be, you know.
Yep, you're 100% right.
You said that you fell in love with Bitcoin. I want to find out, how has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
I said this on Robert Breedlove's podcast, and I got a lot of messages on LinkedIn, which I invite people to reach out to me on DMs on LinkedIn or Twitter. I do try to reply to folks, and I'm happy to, you know, have a 10-minute conversation with anyone if you want to talk, if I can be helpful. You know, a lot of people reach out, they want to figure out how to get to Bitcoin, how to work in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
But what I said to Robert is that I basically have felt, you know, my whole life, that I've had this fear of being homeless, right? Even though, I came from a very secure family. Even though my home life was very secure, I still do feel in some regard that we're all sort of one step away from being homeless, mm-hmm. right? Like, because of the brokenness inside of the system, that, you know, one tragic health event or whatever the circumstance might be, right? Like, there's no protective mechanism for us. We don't have socialized healthcare in the US, which I'm not advocating for at all by making this point. But there's no one to catch you if you fall. And anyway, so that fear of I'm going to wind up living under a bridge, it just has been with me for a long time.
Right.
And when I discovered Bitcoin and really went down the rabbit hole and began to understand how this changes not only your economic behavior, but it changes your motivations, and it makes you very leery to give money to people for junk, right? Stop buying all the plastic stuff that you see when you go into Walmart, or to stop, you know, going to whatever the store is where you might buy your storage containers because you want to have your Christmas ornaments packed away nicely. Like, I question everything now. Mm-hmm. I look at people in stores just endlessly buying containers for this or that, or junk, or, you know, I mean, I'm driving yesterday and this guy pulls up next to me and has his windows down. It's a beautiful day yesterday. And he's in this big Mercedes G-Wagon thing. I don't know how much those are, like more than 2 Bitcoin or more than 3 Bitcoin. And I thought, he hasn't found Bitcoin yet. And so your question was, how has it changed me? It's made me reevaluate what I want and what I'm willing to spend dollars on, you know, because for me, I've really converted. I do convert everything to Bitcoin. And so, you know, sometimes I have to sell Bitcoin when I don't want to. Sometimes not, but I convert to Bitcoin and then I, you know, sell Bitcoin and pay bills or whatever. So I try to live, you know, I'm not on a Bitcoin standard where obviously most of us are not on a Bitcoin standard. I don't get paid in Bitcoin, but I just think that, you know, it helps you reevaluate what you hold as most precious in this world. And what I hold as most precious is, you know, my relationship and my time with Ella, but also really nurturing what my life will look like 20 years from now or 50 years from now, mm-hmm. right? Like, how do I create the best, most, you know, how do I protect myself from all the harm that may come my way? And if you own Bitcoin, at least this is my opinion, not financial. I should have started by saying, you know, not financial advice, not the views of my employer. But I just feel like it's a protective mechanism in so many ways.
It's a defense mechanism. It's defense, and that's the ultimate. You can start from a position of defense, and that you can rally and formulate a strategy, execute a plan, and then you could potentially go on the offense. But directing your time, energy, resources in an offensive way, in a calculated, methodical way, but then you can fall back to that defensive position, and know that you're going to be okay. That shield is there to protect. You actually don't make as many silly decisions, like you were saying before. Like, you walk into Walmart and you just start buying crap and filling the trolley up with shit, and like, people do that. And that is not a conscious way of being. I mean, everyone has their own subjective value preferences. So, you know, whatever. Like, if you want to fill your trolley up with plastic garbage, fill your boots. I don't care. It's none of my business. But Bitcoin just, I guess, it sharpens that focus that you've got this incredibly scarce tool, asset, currency, and you want to allocate it in the best possible way possible so that you can extract the most amount of value, I suppose, is, you know, it sort of amplifies value preferences. Definitely. Yeah.
It does. That's exact. You've said it. It amplifies value preferences. And also, I mean, you know, so I do talk to a lot of people that don't know anything about Bitcoin. And, you know, it's always like, okay, how do I start this conversation? And Ella says I'm really good at speaking to people in a language that they can hear.
Right.
Where I always try to start is, you know, Bitcoin is a value alignment tool. You know, we as Bitcoiners, I think, you know, we as Bitcoiners hold one thing as truth. You know, we believe in liberty, freedom, and private property. And when you identify with what that means, liberty, freedom, and private property for all, you know, and you realize that those are the things that the rule of Bitcoin enforces, like, you can't walk away from it.
No, you can't unsee that.
Right. Again, it's to your point, the North Star. Like, then you're able to see it as the North Star.
It's an anchor. Yeah, I've often described it before on the podcast, sort of like the keel on a boat, where it provides balance. It provides.
It does.
Yeah, it provides balance. So you can get economic wind in your sails or whatever. Maybe it's not blowing in your direction, but you have balance underneath you, and you can rest assured that even if you're maybe not moving forward in this particular moment because the wind ain't blowing or something, that you can remain. I was talking to Rob Brindett about this. I've been diving down sort of like some Eastern philosophy rabbit holes lately with respect to the Tao and metaphysics of quality and a few other bits and bobs that actually Robert Breedlove introduced me to a few years ago. But this North Star, this ability to just anchor yourself and know that it's just there and it doesn't have to do anything, and you can imbue all the philosophies and thoughts and thinking and think boy stuff that I tend to do on this podcast as much as you like, but ultimately it's just a tool, a defensive tool, to enable you to increase optionality over time and space, and therefore for your life, so that you can live a good life. And you mentioned before about being, you know, cognizant of this notion that it could all just turn on a dime and all of a sudden you could just be homeless. And just, I mean, I saw a woman on a train the other day, and she looked worse for wear, and she was sort of mumbling to herself, clearly had some sort of mental health issues. And I remember thinking, like, she was a little girl once, you know, that played with friends, and I don't know, I went and started imagining this woman as like a little girl that just, you know, had, you know, a bedroom full of dolls, and I don't know, just started imbuing this entire life on it. And then it humanized her and softened her so much more, to the point where I could then, I don't know, I just felt like I was understanding more. I was almost a little bit wondering what had happened to lead her to be on this train in this sort of state that she was in. Like, was it the broken financial system? Was it the education system? Was it things to do with the way that we've structured society over the last 50 odd years? And not to say that she didn't play a part in that, and perhaps there was some individual actions that she took, but were those individual actions misguided or not? Were they exacerbated by the broken system structures that we have, that lack of a safety net, as you call it, where she wasn't able to receive the requisite help? And so that little girl is now on the train as this mumbling fool, effectively. And it was really sad, actually. I don't know where I was going with that, but I feel like Bitcoin can kind of be incepted into that. So like what CrowdHealth does, that model is quite interesting. I don't know enough about it, but
I was just before you and I hopped on, I was listening to a 10-minute thing from the CEO of CrowdHealth. Yeah, you're right. They are beyond interesting. I really respect how they're turning healthcare, putting healthcare care back on its feet for folks. Because again, right, like you can have one medical thing that absolutely ruins you financially. And it's just such an interesting model where it's community funded. The CEO was giving the example of how he reduced his own a bill he had for himself by 88%. It was like $4,400, and then it went to like $400, or it was $3,800 and it went to $4,000. I forget the numbers, but the tagline of the interview is like how he reduced this bill by 88%. And he said he spent 12 minutes doing it. He spent 12 minutes by calling and asking a couple of questions, and you know, they offered to cut the bill. But I mean, to your point about the woman, it's, we can't stop things from happening to us Although I do believe food is largely responsible for a lot of the problems that we as Americans have, whether it's depression, whether it's Alzheimer's, it's Parkinson's. I think that the root of all of those evil, cancer, I believe it's food. Mm. I believe it is the problem with our food system. And unfortunately, the American diet is being perpetrated against the citizens of the world. So I'm not sure where you can hide and be safe from the influence of the American diet and the amount of seed oil that's in everything, the amount of corn syrup that's in everything, and how that's metabolically disrupting our bodies and creating opportunity for disease to thrive. But what I do know is that until we fix the food, the best defense that we have as humans is Bitcoin, right? Okay, maybe it's too late for me to change whether or not I get cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. But one thing is for sure, and that is that, you know, I have the safety net of Bitcoin. So let's say that when I'm 80, I have one of these things that happens. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? I own Bitcoin and I'm a devout holder of Bitcoin. I hate selling it. I do sometimes, but I also buy it. I am a user of Bitcoin, but I just feel like, you know, in 80 years, I don't know what it'll be worth. It's going to be worth more than $52,000 that it is today. And hopefully it's worth enough to protect me. In fact, I just this morning I was downstairs, had come back in. I live in a high rise. I'd come back in the door and one of my neighbors in my high rise, he just turned 89 on February the 11th. So, you know, a little more than a week ago. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen him in a few months. And he, what's funny is that he was also my neighbor in 1993 in my very first apartment in Houston. We lived in an apartment complex. Wow. And he was my across the courtyard neighbor. So I've known him, right, essentially forever, since I was 22 years old. And so this morning he said, Lisa, he said, oh my gosh, he said, I know you haven't seen me. He said, but, you know, it's my 89th birthday and I'm doing great. He said, I just had 7 hours of surgery a month ago. And I forget what kind of, cancer he had. He had some sort of melanoma and it was horrible. He had like these blisters all over his face. So here's this, you know, 89 year old man who he's covered up. He's got a mask on, whatever. But I said, Charles, you know, my gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. How are you feeling? How are you doing? And he said, no, he said, I'm great. He said, I've had round the clock care in my apartment for 4 weeks. And I said, oh my gosh, Charles, I'm so happy that you were able to do that. And he said, I know. He said, Lisa, it was $67,000. Think about that. In 1 month, he spent $67,000 to have around the clock nursing care. What? And I said, Charles, you're so incredibly lucky that you could do that. And, you know, that's like the best case scenario. But for, I would say, the majority of people, that is just a goal that's not attainable.
That is wrecked
today.
67 grand for the, what did you say, a week?
No, for a month.
For a month. He had
round the clock care for 4 weeks and it was $67,000.
Gee whiz.
Now he's been single his whole life. He doesn't have kids. Just a very interesting career. He's lived all over the world.
Well, that's your
best case scenario, right?
Yeah. Trade-offs, though. I sometimes I think, obviously that's extortionate, $67,000 for the month. I wonder what salary those nurses are on, or that particular nurse that provided, that helped assist in that care. I don't think it's $67,000 a month, obviously.
No, you have to go through services. I mean, unfortunately, I know this subject well. My dad is in a My dad does not have around the clock. He does have around the clock care, but he's in a hospital setting.
Right.
But it's devastating for most. Don't get me started. Let's change the topic. Yeah,
there's just everyone wants to take a slice, no matter what the context, the industry, the situation is. Under fiat standard, you know, everyone wants to take a piece, and it's generally the most counterproductive or unproductive individuals within that setting that take the largest slice, versus the people that are actually out doing work, doing the production, producing the things, delivering the service, whatever it is. You know, it incentivizes a parasitic behavior such that a bill can inflate to 67,000, and if you probably itemize the receipt, you'd have a look, you'd probably find there's quite a chunk of change dedicated to some sort of administrative bullshit, and you just be like, wow. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
When you're out and about, and you mentioned at the top of the interview that you generated a slide deck and you would go out and discuss Bitcoin with people. Obviously, it's situationally dependent, but generally speaking, how do you explain Bitcoin?
Generally, my conversations are with folks that are either in the banking community or they're in the energy community. And I tend to start with, you can think about it as something used by terrorists, money launderers, drug dealers. It's fine. But what I aim to show you today is that a large part of what you've heard, in fact, most of what you've heard through the mainstream media or mainstream channels is false. But specifically, if you're in the energy world, let me show you how this is economically accretive to your own particular business. And, you know, there people perk up mm-hmm. at that, right? Like an energy person will perk up. And oftentimes, I was out to dinner with, there are two big retail electric providers in Texas, like the two main retail electricity providers in Texas. And I was out to dinner maybe 2 or 3 months ago with the former chairman of one of these big companies. And he's recently retired. And we had never met before. There were four of us. I was with a friend, and then we were with this guy and his wife. And he said, you know, well, Elisa, what do you do? And I said, oh, I work in Bitcoin. He goes, oh, wow, Bitcoin. We don't understand that at all. And I knew what his background was. And I said, well, would you like me to give you 2 minutes of why this makes sense? Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I'd love it. Love it. And I said, okay, so, you're in the energy business. Let's say that you're a generation company. You make electricity. You have natural gas fired power plants, and you spin up and you put electricity onto ERCOT, which is the Texas grid. I said, I won't say his name, but I said, so, DJ, do you know that a non-zero percent of the time that the generation company, the company that's making the electricity, has to basically pay to have excess energy taken, right? Because in order to balance the grid, mm-hmm. They basically want to just have continuous flow from their plants onto the grid and then let the grid basically balance the load with other customers or with other providers. So this generation company pays to have power taken from them. I said, so if you're a Bitcoin miner, if you're this company, you should be mining Bitcoin, mm-hmm. whether it's through a partnership, you do it yourself, right? Because, and factually, there's a huge generation company that's based in Houston. It's one of the largest in the country. It's top three in the country. And 4% of the time, they pay to have excess power taken. Like, how much of the time does Apple pay to have their iPhones taken from them?
Or even like, just this
0%.
Yeah.
I mean, 0% does Coca-Cola pay someone to drink a soda. 0% of the time does Tesla pay someone to take a car. 0% of the time does NVIDIA pay someone to take a chip. But yet, again, getting back to what's a socialized norm, it's socially acceptable for energy producers, whether it's a power generation company or if it's an oil and gas, an exploration, a production guy, it's okay to waste energy. And so my friend looked at me, you know, my new friend, this gentleman that was the chairman of this company, looks at me and he says, "Oh my gosh, is that what this is all about?" And I said, "Well, that's the economic reason why people in Texas are going to care. This is why all of your friends in the energy business will care." Mm-hmm. But I said, it's bigger than that, you know, and if you believe in the ideals of liberty, freedom, and private property rights, then you believe in Bitcoin. And, you know, that started him on his journey of education around Bitcoin. And that, so you have to find a way in. This is not, you know, rocket science by any means. You just have to be able to speak in the language that they speak in, right? Make the case for, I would never go to this guy and say, "Oh, this is a human rights issue, blah, blah, blah." But I have spoken to very high net worth, women's breakfast groups or women's CEOs. And I have told the story of, you know, how there's a woman who basically escaped the sex trade out of China. She was a sex slave in China, and she escaped through, you know, someone gave her Bitcoin, and she was able to buy her way to safety, and she came to the United States, and now she speaks all over the world and tells this story. I do say that to those women, mm-hmm. right? I do say that to people that I feel like that message will reach them, and they have the same reaction. "Oh my gosh, is this what this is about?" And then I might say to the women, "Well, you know, how many of you have friends or partners that are in the energy business, right? And we're in Houston," and most of them raise their hand. I'm like, "Okay, well, let me tell you why they're going to care." And then I give the 4% story. So I don't do that, as my job anymore. I work for Caitlin Long at Custodia Bank, mm-hmm. and my focus is largely with the Bitcoin mining community and working with Bitcoin companies. Custodia provides banking services, not in every state, and we're not FDIC insured. We're obtaining licenses right now to operate in every state, but in about half the states, we can offer products and services. And one of the things that we offer is Bitcoin custody. So we have a custody solution that we built ourselves. We think that we have the strongest legal framework provided for any customer that's in a custody arrangement. And that's thanks to the Wyoming Division of Banking. So anyway, yeah.
I love it. It's all about framing it right so that the individual that you're talking to can relate somehow. If you start talking about the tech and they're into farming, they're just going to shut down. It's not interesting to them. But if you talk about how it can enable them to be more profitable in their business and maybe reinvest in less harmful synthetic agrochemicals, they could be like, "Whoa, you know, I'm kind of interested in transitioning to that thing," and whatever. It's all about framing it up so that it resonates, right? It's like hitting that frequency. And so if you're talking to the oil and gas guys or the energy providers, they just want to know, like, yeah, I mean, I guess it's anyone. How does this benefit me? What do I get out of it? That's really what.
Which is totally fine, right?
Totally.
Like, totally fine if you want to come to Bitcoin for greed. I don't really care. Like, if you want to come because
everyone does,
you
know, though.
You think that it's next and you're going to go buy a house in Malibu, like, more power to you.
Yeah.
If you want to come because it's a better use of your natural gas that's, you know, out in a field. And people talk a lot about flared gas and the benefits of Bitcoin mining and how it reduces flared gas. But I would offer to you that on a orders of magnitude scale larger than the flared issue is the amount of gas that's out there that's just frankly disadvantaged all over the world, right? In Argentina, they're, you know, where they are energy rich, there's oil coming out of the ground with associated gas. There's pipeline to take the oil away. No place to take the gas, or little opportunities to distribute gas. Okay, so that would be a flared example. But even in the U.S., where you have wide distribution channels, right? There's many pipelines that traverse the United States. Some of those pipelines. So when you look on CNBC, when you look on the news, and they quote the natural gas price, that is a reference to a location. It's the futures market representative for delivery at a location that's in Louisiana, the Henry Hub. But, you know, just because that says it's 250 doesn't mean that all over the country, wherever a molecule is being brought up, that you're going to get 250 for it.
Right.
Then, you know, if there's not high demand, or if there's not access to transportation, to good markets, right? If you can't get your product to a good market to be sold, you get disadvantaged pricing, which is happening all over, which I think is just a phenomenal reason for oil and gas folks to be really digging into Bitcoin mining. Because there's places right now where I don't know what the Henry Hub price is. I haven't looked it up in a week or two, but let's just say it's 250. There are places where you're going to get 80 cents an MMBTU, right? Or for disadvantaged gas. There are times when producers are actually achieving a negative for gas, right? Like gas is trading at times negative 85 cents, negative a dollar.
So it's leveling.
If you have Bitcoin miners on site, if you've got Bitcoin miners on site, right? If you call Giga Energy and they send out one of their boxes, you know, shipping container full of miners, or if you call Upstream Data, Steve Barber, Steve sends down a hash hut, you know, you can monetize those molecules really at an effective rate that's probably much higher than Henry Hub. You know, you're probably turning disadvantaged gas, you know, probably turning dollar gas into $5 gas or $7 gas. Why wouldn't you do that?
Amazing.
You know, hopefully you are doing it. Hopefully your reason for not doing it is not because, you know, hopefully you're not doing it because of what you've heard Elizabeth Warren say, or Gary Gensler, or, you know, whatever's on the news, right? Hopefully you're able to go, wait a minute. Let's think about this. This is a commodity first and foremost. This should be just thought of as a commodity first and foremost to any energy company.
It's amazing. It's a meme, but like the earliness with which we're at, the fact that this hasn't caught on and caught fire within these industries just yet, like it's, I'm sure you've got way more insight than me, but like it just seems like it's just it's just waiting for a spark to just once the penny drops, so to speak, it's just going
Definitely.
To catch fire all across the world.
Definitely. But you have to be willing to hear it, right? Like I do think that there is a lot of opportunity for energy companies to hear this message. And they have to be willing to hear it. They need to be open to hearing it.
Right.
But you know, I mean, and I understand from their perspective, they've got bigger fish to fry. They're very good at digging holes. They're very good at effectively pulling resources, you know, from whatever it is, hundreds of feet, 1,000 feet down. They're very good at drilling out in the Gulf of Mexico and bringing resources to shore. You know, maybe this doesn't move the needle enough for the majors, but it is moving the needle a lot for smaller operators already. I mean, those are the people that really reach out to me on pretty much a daily basis. Somebody will reach out to me on LinkedIn and say, "Hey, oh, I just saw your post." I had a post a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, like, I have three big use cases in the energy sector for why the energy companies should be embracing Bitcoin mining. You know, hit me up if you want me to send them to you. And a lot of people responded to that with, "Yeah, I'd like to know what are the use cases." So there are many people like me who are just, you know, beating this drum. And I do it very selfishly. Mm-hmm. You know, I do it to take advantage of the network that I have. I've lived mm-hmm. in Houston most of my life. I was in the energy business. A lot of my friends are in the energy business. So it's a natural audience for me to go to try to disseminate the message. But bigger, on a much larger scale, I want the energy companies to come into Bitcoin so that they can help us fight the fight that is the kind of Elizabeth Warren posse. You know, that you know, people like her who are threatening what I would, I mean, the word that pops in my mind was democracy, but really what we threaten when we threaten Bitcoin is we threaten national security, right? We should be holding it in our U.S. Treasury. We should be promoting mining. We should allow, you know, this should become a big something that we embrace. And, you know, it really trickles again all the way back down to you know, elimination of energy poverty, energy security. How do we really rebuild our grids to, you know, meet the needs of a society that's you know, growing and rapidly changing, right? Our demand for energy is so much higher than it was 10 years ago, and it's only going to go so much, you know, it's going to grow exponentially from here with all the demands of AI, etc. So, you know, Bitcoin mining really allows us to innovate in the energy space and also offers a very real contributor to, you know, fortifying our own distribution, our own you know, the economics of operating these systems. Mm-hmm. And it also, you know, I'm not a climate zealot at all, but you know, I do think that it is great if you are a climate zealot, you should support Bitcoin mining, because nothing promotes innovation in energy like Bitcoin mining, right? For buyer of first resort, buyer of last resort for wind and solar, for hydro. So you're a climate zealot, you're in the right place. You're just on the wrong side of the fight, typically.
Yeah. And you need to get out of your own way in order to see it.
Yeah.
You know, just stop being so ideological.
We all need to get out of our own way, probably.
Amen to that. I totally agree with that. Last question. Let's bring it into land. What does Bitcoin mean to you?
Oh, what does Bitcoin mean to me? Gosh, good question. What does Bitcoin mean to me? I mean, you know, again, I will anchor to, it's the only form of property that can be held by every human on earth, regardless of property rights, right? And property enforces our right to liberty and our right to freedom. I think Bitcoin is freedom tech. Mm-hmm. I think it allows us to be the best versions of ourselves. Best version of ourselves, I should say. Like, we collectively can all be a better person for having Bitcoin.
Yeah, I like that.
What is it to you?
it provides the opportunity to work on being the best version of yourself. I think nowadays there's this sort of superficial, you know, you see it on t-shirts, like good vibes only. It's in like shitty, what do you call it, frozen yogurt shops and stuff like that, where it's like this positive vibes only or good vibes only or this, that, and the other. And it's like, you don't just get positive vibes. You don't just get good vibes. You don't just get the good feelings all the time. You have to work for them. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And if you have an abundance or a surplus, say, or at least an immutable amount of time and energy at hand, to hand, then you have optionality, and then you have the ability to work on being the best version of yourself in whatever capacity that is. And
yeah, amen.
You know, yeah, I totally agree with that. And the more that people do see that and feel that, and then are able to think about that, the better off we'll all be. You know, you mentioned those Bitcoin oil and gas guys that are the smaller sort of fish within the pond. That's the whole point. It's building that thing from bottom up, because the big boys aren't going to latch onto that right away. They're, as you said, they got bigger fish to fry. But if once they see that profit motive and they see the benefit and they see the incentives, well, they're hard to resist. And that's just what will happen. The beautiful thing about Bitcoin, I think, is this: it's ground up. It removes, in conjunction with the internet, it removes gatekeeping. To a certain degree, in some instances, I guess it incentivizes some gatekeeping. With I don't really want to go into all of that. I was talking to a friend of mine about channel liquidity and stuff like that. But anyway, the point is that you can, it's a fair open playing field. And if you go into that field and provide value and people recognize that value, well, you can probably build something quite great and be the best version of yourself, whatever that means.
Yep. You're so right, DJ. You're so right.
Lisa, this has been a great conversation. Good. Yeah, it's going to be it. Look, it's going to take time, and the best things take time. So that's why it pisses me off when they steal my time or steal our time by just printing up trillions of dollars. It's just egregious bullshit. But it's going to take time, you know, to do the things that we want to do. And in the meantime, we've got awesome people like yourself going out there, having these conversations. You're working with Caitlin Long at Custodia. I mean, again, you have like a very narrow, and I say you, I say me, I have a narrow vision of what goes on when I listen to Caitlin or yourself talking on podcasts, discussing what you guys are building over there at Custodia, or even indeed with your daughter Ella doing that stuff at Cornell. These things are all part of this wider network of individuals just all out there doing the work, trying to provide something of use and value to other people to make the world just a little bit better, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Brighter.
And brighter, we outnumber Elizabeth better. Warren 10-1, you know? She's an idiot. You know, for every smart person, there's 10 idiots, but, you know, intransigent minority for the win.
Yeah. Somebody told me the other day, we won't start a tangent here, but that all revolutions that have succeeded in history were started with less than 3% of the people. I find that exquisitely empowering.
That's cool. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Somebody will fact check me and tell me how wrong I am, but go for it. Open to feedback.
Well, to that end, Lisa, where can people find you? Where can they contact you if they have any questions, or they want to fact check you, or they just want to find out more about what you do at Custodia and your work within the energy sector?
Yeah, well, check us out, custodiabank.com. We serve businesses only, unfortunately, not individuals. I'd love it if we added that someday. And yeah, you can find me. I'm findable. I'm all over LinkedIn and Twitter. And truly, it is an honor to speak to people that reach out. I do set up these 15-minute calls with folks. And it's just such a, it's really a privilege to hear what people are working on, where they're working, what their thoughts are about getting into Bitcoin. And, in many cases, people have spent an enormous amount of time trying to orange pill wherever they are currently. And that's what I think we need. I think we need Bitcoiners to infiltrate the system. We don't need, you know, everybody that loves Bitcoin to come work at a Bitcoin company. Like, stay where you are, infiltrate it, you know, be the Bitcoin expert at your company. And, you know, just use, I love it when people use their voice to, you know, to reach others that are outside of our community.
Right on. Lisa, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for spending some scarce time and finite energy telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin. It's been awesome. Thank you.
It's been great. Thank you. Just...